So, good day everyone. We're here for another episode of the DVD show. So, for today we have a former Rain or Shine Lasto painter, a third overall pick in the PBA draft, and now he's a player from the Alaska and Converge franchise for the past like 3 to 4 years. And he's now one of the leaders of the team of Coach Alden Ayo. So, I'll now welcome here on the DVD show Maverick Ahanmisi. Thank you for joining me here on the podcast.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Diego.
Yeah. So to start things off, I want to ask, how have you been doing now? I mean, people know that the conference has just begun, the Governor's Cup. And yeah, the holiday season was like a month away. And you guys had a long break after the finals and of the Commissioner's Cup and everything. So how's your life on and off the court?
Man, I can't complain at all. You know, from day to day, I miss my... You know, I miss home. I miss my family. I miss my girlfriend. But, you know, I still enjoy playing basketball. So I don't really have too much to complain about. And then in terms of like TikTok and stuff, you know, that honestly, my social media is what keeps me sane out here. So, you know, things are going well. We're obviously playing well as a team right now. We're 4-0. So, you know, I'd say things are going well on and off the court for me.
Yeah. Oh, your family's like your whole family's based in the U.S. and you're the only one here, like you and Jarek. Is that how it's?
Yes. Like? My brother is the only family I have out here in terms of my immediate family. You know, I do have family like in the province and stuff, but you know, I rarely get to see them. So.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's still great that you're able to, you know, survive and still continue to be happy with even if you're here with only your brother. But you mentioned about your strong start, your 4-0 start with Converge, and you guys had a import from New Zealand. I think his name was Ethan. I forgot his last name, and you had him for one game only. Yeah. And you had you had Jamal Franklin for the last 3 games. So. How has your preparations been like for this conference? Because you guys have been off to a strong start. And last season, it was also similar because with Coach Alden. So how was the preparation like for this specific conference?
It's been good, man. It's just, honestly, it's the same. It's always been with Coach Alden. You know, he has a very strategic system and a very system that is demanding mentally. So... it's the same approach every conference, you know, repetition and, you know, getting to learn those plays to a point where it becomes second nature. You know, that's really the aspect of his system that is important. It was good. I mean, like I said, we're 4-0 right now. We had Ethan Rusbach, who fit in our system well, but, you know, as part of the business, they thought he needed to be changed, you know, and we got Jamal now. I actually have known Jamal back in LA. I've played against him a bunch of times in LA. So, I mean, obviously, you know, we won 3 games under him too, so he's a good fit for us as well. But, yeah, I can't complain with what's going on with us right now. We just got to keep playing together and following Coach Alden's system.
Yeah. And yeah, Jamal's like immensely talented. Like I've seen it in the last couple of games, even if his shot wasn't falling, he'd involve you guys through other facets of the game. And like, he know how to give you guys an open spots, like give you shots in open spots. But I wanted to ask, like, how many weeks or like, was your former import here for a long time and you guys were preparing already? And then after one game, even if you guys won, they changed him. And then it's a whole different like style of play from another import. So how was that adjustment period like for you guys?
No, it's not hard for us because, you know, obviously Coach Alden is a smart guy. He's not going to pick an import that he feels would be a big adjustment to our system. You know what I mean? Like I said, Ethan fit well in the system, but they wanted to change him maybe due to, you know, certain aspects in the game that they thought we needed help in, but they got an import that they felt is smart, can learn the system well and fits quick into the system. So, and as you can see, he's learned it fast. You know, I don't think it was a big transition for us, because, you know, he's just like another stretch four for us. That's what and gave us already. So it wasn't a big transition at all when Jamal came in.
Yeah, it's been fun watching you guys. But I wanted to ask, like, what do you think is the key to sustaining this? I mean, you guys, everyone's looking at you guys now, similar to like San Miguel and Lex, since you guys are like on top of the standings as of this recording. So what do you think you need to sustain, like when you guys play the likes of San Miguel, Ginebra, or even during playoff time, since that's the most important part of the conference?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're not in the playoffs yet, so I won't talk about that. But, you know, playing against those bigger teams and stuff, as it does get close to the playoffs, what people don't understand is it becomes like a chess match out there. Mm-hmm. Not for the players, but for the coaches in particularly. It's not just like who they put in the game anymore. It's what player they put in the game at what moment. You know what I mean? It's little things like that is what's going to separate the good teams from the bad teams, or the good, the teams that, you know, last longer in the playoffs and teams that don't. So in order for us to sustain this, I think we just need to keep following Coach Alden's system and continue to grow as a group. You know, we're a real young team right now, but we have a lot of great players that have a lot of potential and upside. So they just got to keep learning and growing.
Yeah, it's great that you're mentioning a lot about your teammates and also Coach Alden, because yeah, so like LaSallean, I enjoyed Coach Alden when he was with LaSalle for a couple of seasons, because yeah, it's the last championship he brought to us. So I wanted to ask your perspective. I mean, it was kind of shocking, sort of, because he was in the collegiate ranks, and then he was in the 3x3 before having his first head coaching stint in the PBA. So for you, as a veteran already in the PBA, what was your initial reaction when you found out that he was going to be your coach? And I don't know, like I like the way he motivates his players and the way he is able to make you guys like do things, and he unlocks you guys.
Yeah, well, two things. You know, when I found out he was a coach, one was, you know, I was excited for something new. I'm the type of player that kind of, I enjoy like new things happening to the team, whether that be me getting traded or, you know, a new coach, trades coming in from other, you know, I enjoy that stuff because it's like something I do this every day, practice, you know what I mean, play basketball. So little things like that I get excited about. So when Coach Alden became the head coach, you know, it was something that I took as a challenge, because people were asking me, how am I going to fit into his system? Yeah. I'm going to fit, you know, and I took that as a challenge in, you know, me being, trying to be a flexible player, you know, trying to fit in any type of system that he throws at me. That's what I was excited about. But the second thing I thought about when he became the coach right away was that, man, we're going to be running a lot. And his teams, I think actually before, I don't know if he remembers this, but my brother, when he first came out here, I was taking him to like different practices to try out for like LaSalle, Ateneo, you know, all these places. He tried out for LaSalle, and I saw, and Coach Alden was the coach at the time, and I saw their practice, and that's all I could remember when I heard that Coach Alden was going to be coach. And I was just like, man, I better be in shape for this man's system.
Yeah. Is it the first time that you ran this much in any coach, like even when you were in like high school?
Yeah, I think. No, actually, in college, my senior year, we had Richard Pitino. And that's kind of his style of play, too, like the run and gun, kind of Golden State offense. So. Mm-hmm. It's not the first time, but it's definitely the longest stint that I've done this type of, you know, playing style with the whole full court pressure to rebound and run, then do it again over and over. You know what I mean? I haven't played that fast pace type basketball for a long period of time since like maybe high school.
Yeah. And watching Coach Alden now in Converge, he doesn't press like as much as he did in Letran or in USD or in LaSalle, but then he still presses when you need to. Like, for instance, that game in last conference when you guys were against San Miguel, I think, in the quarters, when you guys were down big and you almost won one of those games because of the immense pressure you put on them, and maybe they thought they were going to win already, and you guys almost pulled it off. So he knows when to do the press. So when does he usually do it with you guys? Like, is it you're like up to you guys, or is it like during when you guys are down only? How is it like for you?
No, it's definitely up to him. I mean, you know, it's his game plan or his schemes. But obviously, if we're up big, we don't really want to use it too much, you know. Obviously, we want to conserve our legs as well. So, but, you know, we also use it as a contingency plan in terms of if we are down, you know, in order for us to get back into the game, we got to make something happen. So he'll use that as, you know, to kind of speed the game up a little bit. Obviously, if you watched our games, you see that he likes us to play really fast. So if he feels like the game is slow paced, he'll do that. He'll let us pressure to speed up the game a little bit. And that's how we like to play. So.
Okay. Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, it's been working out. I mean, you guys have been beating like these great teams the past two conferences because of your speed, and they can't keep up for 48 minutes. But I wanted to ask. Right. Yeah, I wanted to ask how he's able to make you guys buy in. I mean, it's kind of difficult. I think that's why he chose certain players. That's why I think the past two conferences or last year, you guys have had like the most trades because you've been moving around all these players. So how does he make you guys buy in? I mean, people would say that pros, they have like their own life, or it's only like practice and then they leave. Yeah. But then in college, like they have their dorms and they all stay together. Like, how did he do it for you guys since it's his first professional season?
I think it's a trust thing with him. You know, I'm not going to lie to you. The first couple weeks, and I'm sure I'm not the only player that'll tell you this if you ask the team, but I'm sure players that haven't played under him before, it's kind of a shock to play for him at first, you know. And you like the system because it's a run-and-gun type system, but at the same time, you know, at this level, you kind of – you're a pro, so you kind of – in the back of your mind, you kind of think like, damn, like, I don't know if this type of system is going to work in the pros, because, you know, obviously you want to pressure to rattle the other team, you know what I mean? Kind of make them play fast and stuff like that. But we're in a professional league. It's like, how rattled can the other team get? You know what I mean? And I'm not going to lie, the first week or two, I was in my mind, like thinking like, I like the offense, but the defensive part, I'm going to be tired. I'm going to be tired. And it's like, I don't know if I should be pressuring Jason Castro full court, you know, like how much pressure am I going to really put on Jason Castro full court, you know? But after we started winning games and stuff like that, I think people slowly started to buy into the system in terms of like, you know, we have such a young team. He uses that to his advantage, you know. We also have a good amount of vets on the team, me, K-Rax, JT, who are still fairly young that can play and lead the team at the same time. So I think Coach Alden's system, he let us buy in by the results. You know what I mean? Like, the results speak for themselves. And you can't really complain when, you know, you have a 7-game winning streak. So.
Yeah. Coach Alden's really, he's been really having a great time so far in the PBA. And the challenge is like when all the other teams have like tried to scout you guys already and are trying to adjust, and for him to sustain it. And I have a feeling you guys will, especially that he already has the players that he wants, and then it'll take time for him to get these players, get used to the system that he's trying to impart in at the pro level. But I wanted to ask more about you now, like you fitting into him, because I noticed like last conference there were games wherein you'd have like 5 threes. It was like these made threes weren't like part of your game as much before, but now like there was a play I think against Meralco when he ran an elevator play for you in the corner, and then you made like a Dagger 3 and you beat them. If I remember, I think that's against Meralco. Like, he gives you more confidence in the outside shot. So does that also help you expand your repertoire and like also give you confidence in like, yeah, shooting threes now and being the go-to scorer?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Coach Allen is a big part of, you know, my success this year and being with Converge for sure. I tell people all the time that one of the things people don't see behind the scenes of everything, not only practices and everything like that, but the trust he has in me gives me the confidence to play the way I do. And that goes beyond basketball. I feel like when I am injured, you know, he'll tell me to rest, don't push it. And that for me, any player can tell you that that's a big part to them mentally not feeling any pressure in terms of I don't have to rush myself to get back. You know, my coach is telling me to take the time I need to rest my body in order for me to play at 100%. So I think that's a big part. And if you could see, there's a lot of players on this team that are young, but they're starting to flourish. And I think that's that Coach Alden has on a lot of players is the fact that he's able to trust them and give them that leeway. But at the same time, he knows what he wants out of the system and players trust him also. So,
yeah. And then you being one of the veterans, you mentioned like you, Jaron and Kevin Rakhal, like how, as a, like a guard in the team, how does he like help you, or how do you have that initiative to also guide or mentor the young guys? Since I see you're more of like a leader now with this team compared to your previous time, like during Rain or Shine and even your early days in Alaska.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I've learned a lot from those Rain or Shine days, man. It's, you know, I've learned from a lot of good leaders back then. I came in as a rookie. I can't even tell you how many talks I've had with Paul and talks I've had with Gabe and, you know, so on and so forth. Bo, Raymond, Jeff, like I've had so many talks with those guys and I've learned so many things from them that has helped me become like the leader, I guess. And, you know, it obviously it helps that I'm 7 years in the league now. So I kind of have the experience to kind of help the younger generation, like, you know, follow their path too. But yeah, I mean, it's been fun. It's been fun realizing that you come into the league and people try to help you as a rookie, you know what I mean? And now I'm at the stage where I get to do that for my teammates. You know, the people that help me, I get to help that younger generation.
Yeah, that's a great mentality that you're portraying, and hopefully they continue to receive it well and you continue to flourish in the system, because you could see like Justin Arana had that huge game against Rain or Shine. Like, these young guys have the potential to actually play well and thrive in that system of Coach Alden. But one thing that happened also in the Commissioner's Cup that I want to ask you is, how was it playing against guest team? Because I think it's the first time in your PBA career that you played against a guest team, like Bay Area. Yeah. So how was that experience like? And do you think it should continue for at least maybe once a conference annually? Like, not like too much, not every conference there's a guest team, but like maybe once 7 years. So what's your thoughts on playing against someone like that?
You know, I personally have mixed feelings about it all. But, you know, for one, on the aspect of me being just a competitor, you know what I mean? I enjoy the fact that, you know, we have a guest team, something new, like I said, happens into the league. Like, I enjoy that personally. But I don't know if I enjoy it too much, just because obviously, you know, a guest team's coming in, like, and I'm not saying it's unfair or anything, but like, obviously, you know, they have multiple imports. It's not just, you know, so, you know, I think it's still good for this league and it's still good for players to compete against that, because, you know, we're all going to get better at the same time. But I just feel like, I don't know, it's tough for me to say, because I just feel like maybe, you know, if we're allowed to have two imports against a guest team, I think it'd be a better, you know, test for them and us.
Yeah,
that's just my opinion. I mean, but all in all, man, I still enjoy playing against those guys for sure. It's always a challenge. It's always fun to be the underdog, you know, and beat the Goliath. So
yeah, I think it's great to have a guest team, but I think the rules that apply to them must also be like applied to the other team. So if they can only have one import, it's only one import for the other 11, 12 teams. Right. And then
exactly.
Yeah. Maybe that's an adjustment, that it's a learning curve for them since it's the first time that they'll have. Because, like Andrew Nicholson got injured in the middle of the finals and they have a guy right there on the bench who could play like on the next.
On the ready. Yeah. And for me, it's just like, I get that. It's so technically it's only one import playing, technically, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, half the players on Bay Area, for example, they're not fully Chinese, you know what I mean? And you know, we're playing against an American team, basically, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I feel like the best part about the playoffs when imports are here is that you never know, you can't ever count a team out because you never know if the import's going to get injured. You know what I mean? So if an import gets injured for a game or whatever, that's part of basketball. That's part of the whole playoff system in terms of like, okay, maybe this is the number one team, but what if he gets hurt? You know, then they got to play all Filipino. But for Bay Area to have an import go down and then bring another one in right away, it just felt like, you know, it was unfair. But like I said, I never did a great job of, you know, overcoming that and beating them. So
yeah, hopefully let's see what they'll do if it's another Bay Area or another team from an Asian country that can play the next couple of years. But for the next segment of the interview, I'd want to ask more about your childhood and upbringing. Like, it's the same, like, when I had your brother, I believe it's similar where you how you guys grew up, but I want to ask from your perspective as the older brother, and you guys grew up in California, I believe. So I wanted to ask, like, was basketball your first love, or did you have other activities that you were into when you were younger before choosing basketball as like the main thing in your life?
Yeah. I mean, my first sport was tennis.
That
was my first sport, but then I really just fell in love with basketball. But there was a time when I was in love with football as well, like American football. But then my mom wouldn't let me play it, like, at a higher level.
Because
it's dangerous. So I just, at that point, I had to choose. And obviously, my mom chose for me. So, you know, I just ended up focusing on basketball. But, you know, at the same time, it ended up being good for me.
Mm-hmm. But like, what age did you start like choosing basketball, or like, was sports really like the thing you wanted to do as a profession, or did you think you wanted to be like a businessman or something else?
Oh no, I always wanted to play basketball. That was always a dream of mine. Like growing up, you know, especially me. I mean, I'm from LA. I don't know if my brother said this, but we used to watch Kobe all the time. So, you know, that's kind of who we idolized and. That's all we did was play basketball. Me and him play one-on-one. You know, if we weren't playing one-on-one, we were at the park shooting. If we weren't at the park shooting, we were playing basketball with our titos. You know what I mean? That was just like our upbringing. So we couldn't see ourselves doing anything else but playing basketball for real.
How were your one-on-one battles? Was it like physical? Was it a lot of trash talking? Was it?
Yeah, no. It's not. I honestly do wish it was like that, but my brother's not that type of player. He's not. Oh, he's not my brother, if you watch him play, he's a very calm, cool, and collected player. So even if I talk trash to him, it won't even – nothing will transpire. You know what I mean? It'll just it'll just be me talking and him doing absolutely nothing. But, yeah, no, those – we haven't played one-on-one in a while. I think the last time we played one-on-one was like, I mean, the one I can remember, at least, we were really young. So I don't even count those, you know, because, you know, he's obviously younger than me, like a lot younger. But now if we played one-on-one now, like, we're both pros, like, there's no holding back now.
Pretty sure it's going to be an intriguing battle. I mean, it's I don't know. It's like fun to have a one-on-one contest in like the All-Star weekend or something. Like it's something.
Honestly, if the PBA had a one-on-one like All-Star segment out of all the events that they got, I'm watching that one. I don't even need to watch the All-Star game, the dunk. I'll just watch the one-on-one segment.
That's something they should like. It's an evolution or something like they should try out. I mean, you really innovate stuff on the All-Star weekend. I'm pretty sure even in the NBA they've done stuff that they did 1 year, never worked out, people forgot about it. So they could try this. You never know if it's gonna work, right?
You never know, but it would be fun though.
Yeah, I remember a dunk contest before in the NBA when there were teams. It was so boring, and I don't even remember like what were the dunks or what happened. So that's an example of something really bad, actually, that could happen. But I don't think the one-on-one's far from that. I don't think the one-on-one. I think that's going to be fun, especially Filipinos. They like playing one-on-one. Like if you're in the streets, you just say, oh, let's
play one-on-one. Yeah. It's exciting. That's why. And it's very fast-paced. You know what I mean? So I think that's what's so intriguing about that. If they were to come out with a one-on-one like competition, that would be fun to watch.
Yeah. But yeah, going back to your journey of being a professional basketball athlete, I wanted, you know, when you were in high school, where did you play? And were you still in LA, and did you continue playing in LA until like college, or did you move out? How was your teenage years like?
I played basketball at Golden Valley High School. I played there for 4 years. We won a championship. And then after that, I attended the University of Minnesota for another 4 years. And then came straight to the Philippines. And I've been here ever since.
Oh, okay. But yeah, playing in your high school, was that near LA also? So was it a tough adjustment for you moving to Minnesota, since that's not near LA at all?
No, it wasn't. Like, I guess weather-wise, it was a tough adjustment, but it was a tough adjustment, but it was fun because it was just something different for me to kind of get to experience. And that was my first time of kind of being independent, you know, being away from my parents and having to like fend for myself for food and, you know, worry about my own laundry and stuff like that. That's where I really learned how to grow up. So it was fun, even though it was, you know, the winters were brutal.
Yeah, that's why when I go to the state, I'm usually in the west because that's where my relatives are. So I've not really experienced like snow except when I went to like Lake Tahoe or something, but not like real snow where you need to clean the car or something, or like you need to buy other clothing that would fit the weather. So yeah, I understand why it's better to be in LA in the west during like winter time. But yeah, I wanted to ask more about your playing style, like moving from high school to college. Like, what was your role on these teams before moving here to the Philippines? Because of course, here in the Philippines, we already know you. We could search you on YouTube, or we've watched you before. So yeah, how was your, when you were younger, how did you play?
In high school, I still played the point guard position, point guard, shooting guard. So in high school, they called me the combo guard. But I think, you know, my game has changed a lot since then in various ways. You know, I wasn't the best defender back then at all. And that what developed with that was going to the University of Minnesota, playing under Tubby Smith, who was a very defense-oriented coach. So that helped part of my game out. And then when Richard Pitino became the head coach, he was a very offensive-minded coach, which helped my mindset as a point guard in terms of, you know, getting certain players to the right positions, you know, taking a shot when it's open, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I could go down the line of coaches that I've learned little things from that have made me, you know, the player I am today. Coach Kaloy, you know, has taught me certain things about being a point guard as well. You know, setting up picking players, basically being an extension of the coach on the floor. picking plays for certain players, putting them in the right position so that they can also be productive on the floor is what I learned from him. With Coach Yang, it's more so a confidence thing, you know, getting always being ready, regardless if you're on the bench or if you're coming, you're starting five, you know what I mean? That's something I learned from him. And now with Coach Alden, learning to, you know, lead at the same time, but trust, you know, trust your coaches, trust your teammates, and just buy into the system. So I think all those things all together has kind of evolved me into this player I am today. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's incredible that you could think of it right off the top of your head on what sticks to you from your coaches, because not everyone can actually rattle that off, because sometimes they don't remember it specifically, but then it still sticks to you despite playing basketball for many years now. But I'm curious now, since you were playing in University of Minnesota, I mean, anyone's dream who lives in this state would want to be in the NBA, but then if you don't make it like to the league, I'm not sure if like the Philippines would be one of your like initial options, but for you, it was like you played here right away, I think, after college. So is it because you have Filipino blood, or did you also consider trying out like Europe or some other areas, or you really wanted?
No, actually, it wasn't my first choice. My agent found me. He actually was good friends with my head coach at the time in Minnesota. And then he found out that I was Filipino. So he wanted to talk to me about going to the PBA. But I remember specifically telling him that I didn't want to play in the Philippines. You know, that was actually what I told him. Like, that was the very first thing I told him. I said, if I could play anywhere else, get me to play anywhere else. Right.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, I'm still very young and I'm still very stuck in living in the States. You know, I'm already away from my family, but I wasn't ready to make that jump yet. Like to be really far away from my family. Yeah. So I remember the very first call he gave me after I got an offer, it was to Malaysia to play with the Malaysian Dragons. And it was when Coach Ariel was the head coach. And Mo Tautua was actually there. So I would have been teammates with him. But I was so, like I said, I was so young. I was so scared and nervous to make that jump at the time that I turned that offer down completely. And then it took me a couple months to get my paperwork together to go to the PBA. So I stayed like in America for another 6 months or so, and then came out here. And I just thought, man, you know, the only thing that could get me here was my agent. And he told me I will stay with you he stayed with me for like 8 months out here. And that was the only reason I stayed here, because of him. And if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't even be playing basketball out here.
Yeah, that's a intelligent decision he did for you. I mean, you've been here, you played in the D League a couple of years before applying for the draft. So yeah, it's pretty much the right decision for sure. I mean, look how your career has gone here in the PBA. But yeah, I wanted to ask, since you said it was difficult to have that decision of playing here. So aside from like the traffic or the weather, what other aspects of it was difficult for you in terms of adjusting?
Adjustment? I mean, you know, for me, it was the biggest thing was, you know, when I was choosing to come play in the Philippines, I don't think a lot of people know this about the Philippines, that the money here is pretty good. But, you know, growing up in America, you don't really, I mean, me at least, my family is we're a basketball family. So all my titos, they used to tell me like, yeah, go play in the PBA, blah, blah, blah. But in my mind though, as an American kid, I just feel like there's no money in the Philippines. That's how I really feel.
Yeah, you know?
And I don't know if a lot of people know that there is money out here for, you know, athletes and stuff, but that's one of the reasons why I didn't want to come here. It wasn't because of the traffic or none of that. It was because of the money, and I just wasn't ready to be away from my family yet. But, you know, when I came here, that it was I think it was God's plan for me to stay here and win a championship. Because if I didn't win it, if I didn't win a championship, and if I wasn't drafted, I'd be in America.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And talking about the championship, you won with Cafe France, right? So that was like your first conference when you won a championship with them.
Yeah.
Oh, second conference. How was that experience? Because in the PBA D League, I hear it like in Mikey Reyes, if you heard of him for sure. I think you've guessed it on his pod as well. That he mentioned that the PBA D League used to be really fun to watch with you guys like you and even Paul Lee when he was in like Cobra, and there was like Harbor Center, like Big Chill. Like there were a lot of great teams, and then now it's more of like a preseason tournament for like collegiate teams.
Yeah.
How was the competition there before?
I don't know what happened, but yeah, when I came here, the league was still pretty competitive. You know, I mean, you had Happy Toothpaste, and their team was completely stacked. You know, they had like Scotty Thompson, they had Chris Newsom on there, they had Troy Rosario, Garbo Lignette. Like, I could go on and on. Their team was completely stacked. Every player on that team was going to go to the PBA, you know. Then they had Cebuana, Simon and Ciso was there, Motau too. Like, it was really competitive to the point where it felt like you were in the PBA already, just without the exposure. You know what I mean? That's how competitive it was back then. But, you know, I had a great experience playing in the PBA D League. Obviously better because I won a championship. But, I honestly can't tell you what has happened to that league. But, you know, I'm just hearing that people don't like watching now, like the PBA D League, that is. Yeah. You know, but before, man, I used to play in the games, and in days that I didn't even have games, I would go to the games and watch. Yeah. That's how competitive those games were. But now it just seems like nobody wants to go watch the games. I don't know why, though. I don't know what that is about.
Yeah. Maybe because, it's school-based teams, and then some of the teams or schools don't make their good players play. Like, LaSalle took it seriously, so they won it. But then they beat, like, Letran, and Letran didn't play their good players, and they eventually won the championship in the NCAA. So maybe because they use it as like a preseason tournament or like training grounds for the main thing.
I think it's very lopsided too. Like, you know, like you have a UF team in there. Not saying that they shouldn't join, but I'm just saying you have a UF team in there where that team has been playing with each other for a couple years now. You know what I mean? And they have newer teams who I don't know if they're still doing PBA D League drafts or whatnot, but you know, you got to think about the drafts where they acquire, say, a Phil-Am like me, who has never played in the Philippines. You know, he's adjusting to not only the culture, but he's adjusting to the system, style of play, and all that. It's obviously going to be an adjustment for that team to work with that player to kind of produce a winning, you know, a winning team against a LaSalle that practices every day, and you know, all those kids are already in dorms, and you know, they're already getting paid, and so, you know, like stuff like that.
Yeah Actually, I miss those times because I used to watch that and the show, like for instance your game, they'd show it like late at night, a replay, and then get hooked to it because it's a pretty competitive matchup. I mean, I don't know how they'll rekindle those days, but hopefully it happens soon. Maybe because of the pandemic also or something. But talking about your career now, like, what did you need to play, like a certain number of games before you were allowed to apply for the draft? That's why you played in the DD.
Yeah, I think I needed to play in like 13 games or something like that, or I don't know if it was like a certain amount of games or two conferences, I believe it was. So basically a year in the D-League. That was a requirement.
So after that, you applied instantly to the draft?
Yeah.
Okay. So, going into that draft, how was the experience of the draft since? Of course, it was still a traditional draft compared to, like, the drafts now where there were, like, Zoom drafts on Zoom or other, like, ways for them to select players. But for you, that was still a traditional way. So how was that experience, like, being selected third overall? I mean, the Filipino fans weren't as were a few compared to the other applicants, and you were one of the top picks, and Coach Yang really loved you to be the point guard of Rain or Shine. So how was that for you?
It was fun, man. I mean, I obviously didn't expect to be picked third, but you know, Coach Kaloy, when I met him after being drafted, he told me that they were going to pick me all the way. It was definitely a fun experience. And like I said, I always like being the underdog. But for me to be picked third under them is really a blessing because, you know, I got to learn from a lot of good vets on that team. And, you know, I got lucky. I won the championship my rookie year. So.
Yeah, playing under Coach Yang, I mean, there's a lot of people that would know that it's a very fun experience, I would say. Like, it's a lot of cursing also, but he also gives you, like, the confidence to shoot, and he'd get pissed at you if you don't shoot these open shots. And, yeah, it's also great that I forgot to mention that he said that he was really going to choose you over Scottie Thompson, who was, like, the NCAA MVP when in his senior year in Perpetual. So he really wanted you. I mean, he was very adamant about it. But then, yeah, going back to your championship with Rain or Shine and Coach Yang, how did you get surprised with how he approaches the players? Because some players would get maybe intimidated with the way he coaches, especially because he's used to having veterans like, yeah, Bo, Paul, Gabe.
No, I wasn't intimidated at all. I mean, that's just how I've had coaches before him treat me like that already. Oh, okay. So I already knew that type of, you know, coach that he was. What's funny is leading up to the draft, you know, I was going in all to all these draft suites and stuff like that. And they were all asking me like, who would you like to play for? Blah, blah, blah. I think at one point, you know, I didn't really know who was a good coach or what, you know, I just saw what would be fun or look like a good fit for me. And I remember saying Coach Norman, and then they asked me if there was any coach that I would not like playing for. I remember I said Coach Yang. I said Coach Yang, and then they picked me, and I was like, wow, like this is definitely meant to be. Because after that, like I said, we won a championship, and like, no, I actually love Coach Yang's playing style. I love how he treats his players. You know, he treats them very professionally. So, I was really blessed to be under him.
Yeah, playing under Coach Yang, why did you think that you didn't want to be with him initially? It's because of his reputation, or what was it like?
Yeah, no, it's not really his reputation. It's just like, you know, his persona he has on TV. A lot of people might see him as like this big, not obviously he's not a big guy, but like his demeanor is like, you know, he's a real grumpy, you know, strict guy. But he's actually, that's just, you know, when he comes to basketball, his job, that's what he's about. But honestly, practice, he's cool as ever. Like outside of the game, he's cool as ever. Like you'll never see him take his work outside of the court. You know what I mean? You'll never see him like hold a grudge. Like if you played bad, he's going to let you hear it in the locker room. But after that, like, you know, he'll be like, what's up? Like, where are we going to go eat dinner tonight? Like, you know, he's that type of guy. So, you know, that's the persona he gives off, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Playing under him and winning that championship as an independent team. I believe it's the last time that you guys won a championship. I mean, it's the last time an independent team won a championship. Aside from like, yeah, the SMC and MVP teams, it's like what, almost 60 plus years now. So why do you think that's the case? I mean, not like in the politics side, but more of like how the other teams could bolster their lineup. Because yeah, it's always a question that these teams are winning every championship, and that's why no one watches the PBA, blah blah blah. Like people say, like the viewership's lower. I mean, I don't know if it's true. I don't have like the data to back it up. So how do you think the independent teams could become more competitive? Because the other things are like a given. Like, we don't want to talk about it, but like, you know about those stuff already. So, yeah, how do you think the independent teams could be like Rain or Shine during that 2016 run?
I don't know, man. I wish I had a solid answer for that question. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's tough. I really do believe it's tough for the independent teams. And I think if there's anything I could say to this question, it is that I feel like I don't think it'll ever happen, but I do feel like the fans should root for the independent teams more often than mm-hmm. than the, you know, the super teams, I call mm-hmm. them. I mean, you know, the super teams, it's like, I get it, you know, they're winning, but they're supposed to win. That's just, you know, that's just how I feel about it. Like, and I'm not saying it would be fun to play on those teams. I'm sure it is fun to win, you know, all the time. But I, for me personally, I, even if I were on one of those teams and I won a championship, the most important championship or most meaningful championship that I will ever have won is the Rain or Shine one, because nobody expected us to win that. So for me, it's just tough to say like what independent teams can do to win. I mean, obviously, I think what Coach Yang did in order to win that championship was he held his guys together for a long time. You know, mm-hmm. They had a streak when I got there. They had a streak of making like, I think, double digit semifinals runs. You know what I mean? So keeping those guys together like that for a long period of time, even against all the odds of like, you know, the super teams and like the San Miguel group, the MVP group, whatever. Like, I think he had a chance with the team he built because of the chemistry that he built. You know, they were a family before I even got there. They mm-hmm. were a family, period. And I've never been a part of a group of guys like that to where, I mean, we were hanging out all the time. Like, it didn't even feel like practice at most of the time. At all. Like, I would be excited to go to practice because I'm going there to hang out with my boys. That's like how I really felt practice was like, even with the coaches. Like, there was nothing ever that felt like, you know, this isn't my family or like I'm here to work on it. It felt like I was going to play basketball for fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what he built, and that's what made us, you know, play together so well. And I think that's the only thing that really separated us from like maybe the other teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you could see it also like in the NBA, there are like the big market teams like the Lakers and like the Celtics and the Heat and all these other teams. But then the small market teams win from time to time, like the Raptors won in 2019 because of, like, right, you could say it's lucky or something. But then you could see like these teams are really tight knit. And I guess it's kind of tough. I get it. Like in the PBA, the independent teams, like, off the top of my head, I can remember like Alaska with Coach Alex Compton before when they were up 3-0 against San Miguel. Like the team's not already, like, they're not intact anymore. They're not close to being intact. It only gave them a couple of years. Or even Coach Topex, I believe, in Phoenix when they reached the semis with like Calvin, Matthew Wright, Jason Perkins. Like, it's an independent team. But then after like one or two semis appearances, everyone got traded. Or like, a lot of their players got traded.
The business of it all out here, maybe more so, is tough because also, and that's why they have the rule in the PBA that, you know, teams have players' rights, because I just feel like if it was a free agency, like free for all, like the NBA does, like, you know, let's just call it like we see it. The players are going to go to the super teams, you know. Who doesn't want to win? You know, that's just the name of the game in terms of the business. So I think that's where it's pretty tough for those low market teams, like the independent teams, to kind of get good players to want to stay, because, you know, obviously, you know what you're up against as a player. You know what I mean? Hey, do I stay here and be loyal? Because, you know, that's what I want to do. But also, I'm working my butt off every day to win a championship. How, you know, like, or do I go to this team and I'm guaranteed to get close, you know, or do I stay and really bust my butt? Yeah. And I don't know if I'm gonna even get that close, you know? So that, I think that's what makes it tough for the independent teams to kind of compete sometimes.
Yeah, that's great that we were able to tackle that part, because, yeah, could be controversial for some, or others might say something
that's not supposed to be said. If it needs to be said, I'm gonna say it. If I can't say it, I'm gonna tell you I can't say it.
Yeah. We can say it off the record, or yeah. But then, yeah, that's great that we were able to phrase like my question and your answer well to not make it sound bad. But then for the Rain or Shine team, you mentioned a lot about the chemistry, and you were like basically they already had like a nucleus, and you were inserted there. So did you always have that mentality that you'd welcome it from like veterans like Gabe, Paul? Like, was that something new to you when you have these veterans who were very admirable in their craft, and you were already put there? Like, do you think that you adjusted well in having those kinds of guys, and it helped you over the course of your career, that from the beginning you had these reliable players on the fold?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my career wouldn't be what it is today without those guys, for sure. I still talk to those guys now, you know what I mean? Even if they're my opponents or whatever, but like, no, they taught me so much. You know, I came in as a rookie, obviously, with Rain or Shine, and I remember Paul was injured, you know, and, you know, for a guy like that, you know, to be one of the guys on the team and then kind of mentor me into being like, you know, the guy as well, like trying to help me become what he was during that time, you know what I mean? That was a big help for me. And for those guys to be vets and but also be selfless to you know, to a young kid like me coming in, obviously in my mind as a rookie, you know, you come in and you're like, oh, I'm gonna take his spot, I'm gonna you know, that's got to be the mindset, because or else you might not last long in this league, you know what I mean? But coming in like that, at the same time, it was kind of like a shock to me, because all these players, you know, obviously, you know, you got Jeff Chan, you got Gabe Norwood, you got Paul Lee, and you know they're playing big minutes. You know that, you know they're a big part of the team. But at the same time, it was a shock to me, because they're helping me. They're helping me. It was almost like, man, you guys are helping me trying to take your spot. You know what I mean? Well, it wasn't at that point. It was like, wow, this is not what I expected at all. It wasn't like a cutthroat attitude at all. It was like more so like, hey, I'm not going to always play well. Like, I need you. Like, so regardless if, you know, if I'm playing 20 minutes, if you're playing 30 minutes, like we're going to need you, period. And I think that's what's also good about Coach Yang's system, is that you don't know if you're going to play 20 minutes. You could be the superstar. Yeah. You might not even play that game. Like, that's just how his system is. And I think that's what made that team so selfless with all those superstars on it, was like, okay, yeah, I could be averaging 20 points, but guess what? Coach Yang might not even play me today. Like, that's what it is. And so me knowing that, it's like, man, I might need to step up.
Yeah, playing under Coach Yang, did he have like a way to choose the starting five for every game? Because until now, I haven't heard anything. Is it like random, or is it like in practice, whoever plays well? How does it work for you guys?
I don't think it's random. I'm sure he has his, you know, his choices in terms of like schemes, like who he thinks is going to defend a certain player, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, okay,
it's random, though. It looks random to the outside you know, people. But I think one of his strategies too is like, it's always looked random because you can't scout for that. You know, you don't know who's going to start. So we could be planning for Jeff Chan to start, but guess what? He's not even playing today. We don't know that, you know?
Yeah. That's how he is. Even until now, like when their last game against Ginebra, I think he put Gabe Norwood in the starting lineup because I think he wanted him to guard Brownlee from the start of the game.
Exactly. Yeah. But he didn't even play the previous game before that.
Yeah. You know? That's how he does it. Or he'd play like 5 minutes, and then his intention was because he'd play a lot like in the next game. So, yeah.
That's how it is, though. He keeps players on their toes. Like, but there's one thing about his system that we kind of as players figured out, is like you always really have to be ready, because you're sitting there and, you know, most times, like when you're a young player and your coach doesn't put you in at all, you kind of get discouraged, like, oh man, like I'm not going to play, you know, but we kind of figured out with Coach Yang's system that if you didn't play the entire first half oh, you better be ready because you're gonna play either the entire second half or you're gonna start the next game. That's how he does it. So, like, regardless if you didn't play in the first half, like, people don't really get discouraged because you know something's coming. Like, you know you're gonna play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And I think that helped it. Also, the opponents, they get confused. They can't, like, plan anything, basically. Focus on their own, and then it's hard to plan what Coach Yang will do for any game, especially in a series, like, especially when you guys won. But I wanted to focus on that. Like, you won a championship in your first year, and others may think that the PBA is just like this, like, oh, it's not this easy to win or something. But then for you, it's really tough. Like, you had Coach Caloy after Coach Yang. It's like only a couple of years. And then you got traded eventually. Then you had like different coaches in your Alaska and Converge stint. So how much did that help you playing with the veterans? And did they did this like whole other tenure you have with Coach Caloy and the other coaches, like, do you think that your rookie year helped you because of that? Or maybe a negative thing also that you experienced winning and having that much fun early? How was your perspective?
No, I think it is a great experience for me to win a championship with them my rookie season, you know, because I guess you could look at it as a negative kind of too. Like, you know, I reached such a high in, you know, the PBA already for winning a championship. It's like now, every time I fall short of that, it's a real depressing time for me because I already know what it feels like to win one. You know, I feel like for the people that haven't won a championship yet, yeah, I'm sure they get pissed too. Like, you know, oh, I haven't won, but they don't know what it feels like yet to have won one. So their level of maybe sadness about losing can't be that bad because they don't know what it feels like yet. For the people that won one, and especially for the people that have won one, and then you get so close and then you lose, it's like, oh, that is the worst feeling ever. But the fact that I was able to win one, also, you look at it, the flip side is I know what it takes. Mm-hmm. You know, I know what it takes to win one. I know what it takes. I could see a team, and I know if a team is capable of possibly winning a championship. You know, I can see if we're short of certain pieces to win a championship. Like, that's the benefit of winning one so early.
Yeah, that's a great mentality. And it's like a mature mindset you already had, like, especially that age. Like, everyone may think that it's just fun, but then you now, like, growing as a player in the PBA, it's great that you have that mindset of being more mature in how you receive, like, whatever happens in your career in the PBA. But yeah, I think it's been fun talking about like your basketball career, but I want to focus now on what you said a while ago in the start of the episode, where you do like a lot of TikToks now and people have seen your TikToks. I have friends that don't watch the PBA and they ask about you, like, who's this guy? And then I'm like, oh, he's from Converge. He's a player. And yeah, he's one of the good players of Converge. You're like, oh, wow, he's popular on TikTok. So I'm interested, since a lot of people like didn't really see that as like a side hustle, you would say.
Yeah,
people would just focus on like business or like sports writing or media, but then other kinds of media. But you being a TikTok, like, let's just say TikTok star, like, how did that start? Like, were you really interested in like social media content creation, like, I don't know, years back, or is that pandemic?
No, not at all. I mean, like, I always saw social media as like just an outlet for me to kind of keep my family in tune to what I'm doing out here. You know, obviously they're not around to see what's going on in my life. So that's the real reason why I only use social media. Before, I never used to post as much as I do now. But it all started when I think it was pandemic times, for sure. I think it was only 2 years ago. Pandemic 2 or 3 years ago, I came back here and it was still the time where when you flew back, you had to quarantine for like 10 to 14 days, something like that, in a hotel. And I remember being in a hotel for 14 days and all I could order was the food at the hotel. So I literally tried every single thing on that menu and I had zero. I had nothing else to do. You know, like I don't really watch TV like cable out here in the and Netflix. I damn near watched everything on there. I was playing Call of Duty every day, and I was still jet lagged at that time, so I couldn't sleep. You know, and so in my mind, I was like, man, what can I do? I was really finding something, like I was itching. So that's when I just started. I'm like, man, I'm just make some TikToks. I remember one of my first TikToks, I think my very first TikTok was like me jumping on the bed just because I couldn't sleep, you know, and it was like 4 a.m. And then, you know, I was just posting daily just cause. And then I remember one day one of them blew up. And then ever since then, I just haven't stopped, you know, and it became this whole thing. And I never really thought of social media in that light, like it being a business. But as you get into like the whole social media game and people start following you and stuff like that, you start to realize it is kind of a business, though. Mm-hmm. You know, it is, you're using it to brand yourself and how you market yourself to people. So, yeah, it's been fun. I mean, you know, and it's fun for me because I am bored sometimes, you know, and it is a way for me to communicate with people without actually having to like go talk face to face with them. But I am, you know, I feel like pretty connected to my community in terms of like, you know, questions they ask me and, you know, if I could help them with certain things, like, you know, so it's cool.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and talking about that, like you started with it with a random video. Like how do you have that like continuous mindset of developing new content? Like do you have like inspirations or do you like lay down on your bed and think of what's like something funny that I could do today? Like how's that? Because that's a challenge, like even here in the podcasting thing, like sometimes I don't know how to make it interesting for the audience since I've had like 100 episodes. It's like various guests, so it's more about you guys.
But then, like, I get inspiration from scrolling through TikTok. You know, there's certain things I see, or maybe some audios that I find, you know, that I feel like if I find that audio funny, maybe other people would find it funny if I use that audio, you know. And I try to, the way I create content, I guess, is me using the content, but I'm relating it to my life. You know what I mean? So, and I try to, and I'm sure that the things that I can relate to in my life that I push out there, a lot of people can relate to that, you know? So that's how I really try to find out content. It's not like I'm sitting here, you know, every day like, oh man, what should I, you know, post now? It's more so like, I'm scrolling on TikTok, I see something, or I, you know, and I'm like, oh, I can use that. And I use it for a certain thing, you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. And talking about like the community you say you've been building, excuse me, being on TikTok, I'm not as active. So I only see a lot of the ones you repost on IG. So I'm not sure if that's all of it. So like gaining the platform and like, yeah, the following that you have on TikTok, and like do you really give the time to like reply to these people? Because some like athletes or some celebrities wouldn't like reply or like interact with their fans on TikTok.
I mean, I take the time to reply, you know. I don't reply to everything, obviously, but you know, I do. It's hard, I guess, when you're getting a lot of comments. Now the funny thing is, for me at least, I don't know about other people, but the funny thing is I do see everybody's comment. Like I really do see everybody's comment. So whether that be good or bad, you know, I see it. I try to reply to most of them, but you know, I only reply to the ones where I feel like, you know, I can make content out of, or, you know, things that seem interesting to me. If they ask me a question, I answered a question the other day about shoes, you know, basketball shoes. So certain things I like to reply to, but in video form, but other comments, I like to reply, period, like, you know, as a text. But anyway, for me to like communicate with them, if I'm helping them in any form, shape or form, like I'll do that.
Yeah. But being on TikTok, isn't it toxic? I mean, like other people say that's where the toxic comments appear. How about for you?
Oh, it's toxic for sure. But I enjoy the toxicity. It is what it is. Like, if people, what's funny about it is people think that just because they can't see me, I think this is with any athlete or any, person that has a large following. There's always going to be haters or, people that say bad things about you. But what's funny to me is those people who don't really even know the type of person you are have their opinion on how you live your life and stuff like that. So that's always interesting to me because, and that's what I like about TikTok personally, is because I'm able to reply with a video. Like the other day, I think somebody, yeah, I did make a video the other day. It went viral, but this video, somebody said that I was being Mayabang, and I shouldn't be Mayabang if I haven't won a championship in the PBA yet. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, this is a perfect video because, I told him, I said, yeah, you know what? That's true. You're right. I shouldn't be Mayabang. Like, I should be humble. But the only thing is, I have won a championship, so I guess I can be Mayabang now, right? That's what that means. That's what the comment means.
The guy didn't do his research, or he didn't follow your career when you were a rookie.
No, but that's what I like about people in the community in TikTok is like, not obviously they're not going to know who you are, like, but just little questions and things like that, they, you're able to answer. People are able to find out, more about your life and stuff like that. So it's cool.
Okay, but then yeah, being on TikTok, what are like the external opportunities you've gained being on a platform like that? Like, were there brands that have approached you? Have you gained, like, I don't know, like, what are the other benefits you could receive being famous on a platform like this?
I'm still to be honest with you, I'm still trying to figure that out, man. Like, I really, really am trying to figure that out. And what motivates me honestly on the platform is, like I said, the people. If I can help them in any way, shape, or form, I think those brand deals and stuff like that stuff will come. But yeah, I just have fun with it personally, and I think that is an important thing about blowing up in social media, is like you have to like the content that you put out, because then it won't feel like work for you. You know what I mean? So
For sure, yeah. Yeah, but like being on TikTok, like some would say, or having a YouTube channel, some would say, like, oh, you'll have fun doing it for like a couple of months or like a year or two. But then being on, like, yeah, being a content creator on the side, like, people would say that it started because of the pandemic. But then what would you say is like the key to being sustainable or leaving that mark to your followers or to your audience, and continue for them to support you and for them to be loyal to you? Because yeah, more people create content now since we're like, oh, it's easy or whatever. So how do you continue to have that mindset or making sure that they continue to support you? And
Like I said, I just enjoy it. I try to have fun with it. And for my TikTok followers and stuff, I guess, they tell me what they like, out of my content, and I try to give them, what they want. People, I like to do daily vlogs sometimes. People want more content of that, so I give them that. Obviously on my Instagram, it's the same type of content, but more so people like to see the comedic side of me, the funny comedy, like Tagalog comedy stuff. Like, they like that, so I like to post that for them. But in terms of like keeping an audience, I guess it's just staying consistent with the posting. Obviously, you don't really realize once you start to grow like 1,000 followers, 2,000 followers, vice versa, 10, 15, whatever. You start to realize like these people that are following you, they're following you for a reason, and it's because they want to know more about your life. You know what I mean? That you seem interesting to them enough for them to follow you. So they want to know more. And for me, it's like some days I don't want to post, but then I think about the people that support me and follow me, and I'm like, man, like they're probably wondering like what I'm doing today. So like, I'll post something or I'll say something on social media.
Yeah, and so yeah, Thank you again, Maverick. It's fun, been fun talking to you, and I appreciate it. I'll continue supporting like your TikTok career and your social media career. And yeah, hopefully I could have you on the pod soon. But before you go, do you have any final message?
Yeah, I mean, for people that are watching, you know, continue to support the PBA, continue to support Converge. We have a game tomorrow against Talking Text at 3 p.m., I believe. So thank you for having me, Diego, and continue the support.
Yeah. And hopefully you enjoy your new haircut for tomorrow's game that you're going to have. You're going to have now. And yeah, thanks. And thanks for being here for over an hour. Before you go, is it okay if we take a picture?
Sure.
Okay, I'll take it from here. 1, 2, 3. Okay, thanks, Mav, for joining me here on the pod. And yeah, hope to see you soon and stay safe.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye. Thank you.